910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. The world mourning the death of Pope Francis. The 88-year-old pontiff died earlier today. The Vatican released his death certificate saying Francis suffered a cerebral stroke that led to a coma and then irreversible cardiocirculatory collapse. The first Jesuit in Latin elevated to the papacy, stating in his will that he wants his funeral to reflect his life of humility. ABC's Marcus Moore has details.
This was a man who was a different kind of pope, and when you read through his will, that really comes through. And what we will see in the funeral that is expected in the days ahead, that it will be in line with his wishes, and something that he hoped would be more of a less excessive and more of a humble type of proceeding. And that is the kind of pope that he was.
This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction says it has not received a response from the Department of Education after refusing to sign a request certifying that it is in compliance with the Trump administration's policies on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. The agency had previously announced it would not be signing the certification request, arguing that the request lacked clarity and threatened local control of the state's public school system. If the DPI does not comply with the policies, Wisconsin's public schools could lose crucial federal funding. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents to attend their local Deer Management Advisory Council meetings over the next couple of weeks. The meetings will take place across the state through May 1st, offering residents the chance to share feedback on local deer management practices and recommendations for the 2025 season. The public feedback gathered at the meetings will be used to develop recommendations for Natural Resources Board review in June. A list of scheduled meetings is available on the DNR website. The Barron County Board of Supervisors has approved the sale of $4.8 million in general obligation corporate purpose bonds. The bonds were awarded to the Bank of Oklahoma, which won the competitive bidding process by offering an interest rate of 4.14%. County officials say the bond money will go towards projects like updating communications equipment at the Emergency Dispatch Center, infrastructure upgrades at the Justice Center, and new boilers at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire-Barron County campus. The Western Lake Superior Sanitary District has officially rebranded to promote its environmental sustainability practices. On Wednesday, the organization covering wastewater and solid waste services announced their new name, Resource Renew. Officials say the name change is meant to represent their pursuit of becoming energy self-sufficient. Along with the announcement of the new name, organization officials also promoted some of the new technology they've been utilizing that produces clean energy from renewable sources. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers beat the A's. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the A's 14-1 to take the series 2-1. 23-year-old right-hander Logan Henderson, making his major league debut on the mound, gave up only 3 hits, 1 run. He struck out 9 over 6 innings.
I don't know if I can sum it up yet. I mean, I'm just super thankful, man. It's accumulation of a lot of hard work and a lot of people that have believed in me, and just got to thank all my family, friends, and everybody who's helped me get to this position.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Oh, he was great. You know, you guys saw it, 6 innings, and yeah, that's the best I've ever seen him throw. I never have watched the success he's had, so it's great to see.
The Brewers on the road tonight in San Francisco. NBA, the Bucks reviewing what went wrong in that 117-98 loss to the Pacers Saturday. Game 2 of the series tomorrow night in Indianapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Spotty sprinkles wind down this afternoon, but the winds won't quit, blasting us out of the northwest with gusts around 30. High temperatures today will scrape about 50 degrees and then fall below freezing tonight to the low 30s. A little bit warmer tomorrow with more rain rolling in. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 42.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Mike Starr joins us here on Nightlight.
Your timing, good fellas, Mike. What you just said was an ad-lib to De Niro. He's like, security, and you're saying, you're looking at him.
Well, that whole scene was improvised. And Paul Hip, he said, make sure you don't call it ad-libbing. It's improvisation. It was quite a process that Martin Scorsese put us through over a few days that it would come out like that. It wasn't just like, hey, how you doing?
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters talking about the SAVE Act.
The kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud.
There is no evidence of this. Zero.
Non-citizens, no. They're not eligible to vote.
There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Matt Nair on air. Moving soon to its new time. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pete Schwalbe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee Film Festival Program Director Kirsten Larson and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison discusses their new lineup. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal. But everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing.
I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are joined this first half hour of the 3 o'clock hour by one of our great friends with the Center for American Progress Action Fund, here to talk with us about Social Security is their senior fellow who thinks a lot about labor equity, you know, things like paid leave, which we should have a whole lot more of. We could probably spend about 2 hours talking about just paid family leave with our next guest, but we're going to focus on Social Security. Her name is Molly Weston Williamson. She also is a lawyer, Yale law graduate. We could talk about Yale right now, too, given everything. So much going on, Molly, but especially a poignant discussion about Social Security today as the Dow Jones is down 2.5 points as markets again roiling as Donald Trump doubles, triples, quadruples down on attacking the independence of the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell as people are looking at their 401ks with increasing trepidation makes our conversation about preserving Social Security and what's going on in the Trump administration's draconian cuts there too, all the more important. Welcome, Molly. Thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me.
So the Trump administration is objectively has put the Social Security Administration on the list of sort of Doge-style chainsaw cuts. That is not immune, despite Trump's statements, oh, I'm never going to cut Social Security. We're never doing any of those things. Donald Trump can never introduce a piece of legislation to curb a Social Security benefit, but he can damn sure break the administration of said benefits, right? Is that what's going on, Molly? Is that really the headline here?
That's exactly right. So I think the thing to know is we know that he's cutting Social Security because he's cutting the Social Security Administration. And when you cut the agency, you are cutting benefits. You're putting the Trump administration and Elon Musk and Doge between you and your Social Security benefits, between your grandma and her Social Security benefits, between you and the benefits that you've earned and that you're entitled to count on.
Yeah, I think that this is what we have to focus on. And I've been trying my best in what I talk about to not just focus on the words that they say, though it's important to listen to that too. But Donald Trump has said a few times, I'm not going to cut Social Security. He's also said that he's open to cutting entitlements and Social Security is an entitlement. So the man lies all the time. Who knows what he actually thinks? But he's doing everything to make it incredibly hard and if not difficult or impossible for people to continue to interact with the government department that sends them their checks or makes their deposits. Can you tell us about what those cuts are and how they're impacting whether and how people get their earned, promised, and worked for Social Security benefits?
So what we're seeing right now is they've set a target of cutting 7,000 jobs in the Social Security Administration, and that's in an agency that's already at a 50-year staffing low, even though there's a lot more people who are retiring and counting on Social Security than there were 50 years ago. So Social Security didn't have 7,000 jobs to spare. It didn't have 7 jobs to spare. So they're cutting staff, they're cutting regional offices, they're threatening to cut field offices, and they're cutting back on services. So we've had this hokey pokey about exactly what cuts to phone service they're making, where they change their tune day to day. But what we know is it's a lot harder to get somebody on the phone than it was a couple of months ago. People are waiting hours and hours to talk to a human being. They're finding it harder to use the phone, or they're prevented from using the phone to do even basic stuff like updating your bank account information. And when you can't get through by phone, it pushes people to go to the offices in person, except the offices are understaffed. You can't get in if you don't have an appointment. So that pushes people to the website, except the website keeps crashing. And so what all of this is adding up to is if you can't get to a person, if you can't get to the system to update your information, to make a new claim, because there are new people who need disability benefits or are retiring every day, that's making it harder and harder day by day to get to those benefits, to make sure that those benefits that you have earned, that you're counting on, are going to show up for you. And that's happening right now, not in the future, right now.
So again, this is pay attention to what they're doing, and what they're doing is breaking the government department and the processing systems that enable people to get their benefits, to update their benefits, to apply for benefits. You break the process, you break the system that provides it, and guess what? The benefit ultimately would go away by effect anyways, right? Like, that's what is happening here. And I wanted to put together that logic tree again for people, Molly. You slash the number of employees, which means fewer people able to answer phones, fewer people to staff regional and field offices, fewer people to update the systems and operate the online systems. So you can't get through on the phones. You can't go to the same field offices because those are closed. You can't get through on the website because that's crashing because it's not getting updated. It's a frightening set of circumstances right here, and 1 in 5 Americans rely on Social Security. Can you tell us specifically about some of the cuts here in Wisconsin and what people can do if they are concerned about having to apply for new benefits or making changes? Do you have some tips, Molly, for how people can navigate the system given these cuts?
Sure. And in Wisconsin, it's actually closer to 1 in 4 people are counting on Social Security. There's about 1.4 million people counting on Social Security in Wisconsin. So that's your friends, that's your neighbors, that's somebody down the street. Everybody loves somebody who counts on Social Security. And so I think right now what we're seeing is be ready for wait times, be ready to have to try multiple methods to get to what you need, be prepared to have to go in person or to make an appointment, to have things take longer than you were expecting them to. And I think at the same time, I think being really vigilant about what's coming next. Are there worse cuts coming? You know, we're hearing the president keeps talking about fraud in Social Security, even though we know fraud is vanishingly rare. Elon Musk keeps calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, which is what people who don't like Social Security have said for decades and decades, and it's never, ever been true. So being ready for, are there bigger cuts coming?
Yeah.
Being ready for, is my field office that I need going to close? Is somebody going to be there to answer the phone? And being prepared to really try to protect your Social Security, which you should be able to count on just working.
Correct.
You should be able to count on it's just there and you don't have to think about it.
It's remarkable to me that at the same time, they're going to make it so much more difficult, if not impossible, for some people to obtain their benefits. Because when I talk with my family who are older, phone and in person is by far the preferred way because they have a harder time interacting with technology and navigating it, especially when there's problems. You make that super hard. At the very same time they're doing this, you look at the IRS and it's like, oh yeah, let's shut down that free, easy way for people to interact with the Internal Revenue Service to get their refunds sooner. Oh yeah, by the way, there's a whole bunch of private companies that do that. It's just, it seems very fig leaf at best. And yet we constantly hear these attacks on Social Security, these lies. Oh, they're paying people 150 years old. Lie, right? Over and over again. I wanted Molly to play for you and our listeners a clip of Ronald Reagan talking about Social Security back in the day. Elon Musk calls Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Let's see what did Ronald Reagan, the greatest Republican of all time, according to many, what did he have to say about Social Security? Let's take a listen.
Well, Social Security, let's lay it to rest once and for all. I told you never would I do such a thing. But I tell you also now, Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Social Security is totally funded by the payroll tax levied on employer and employee. If you reduce the outgo of Social Security, that money would not go into the general fund to reduce a deficit. It would go into the Social Security Trust Fund. So Social Security has nothing to do with balancing a budget or erasing or lowering the deficit.
Big facts from Ron Reagan. Molly, can you just generally address some of these attacks on the Social Security system and on funding concerns more broadly?
So what we know about Social Security is that it works. That the system of we all pay in a little bit out of every paycheck, and that pays for the benefits we need when we retire, the benefits we need in disability. We're all supporting and taking care of one another in the way that we were taught to do in kindergarten. Social Security has been working for almost 100 years. People have built lives and livelihoods on that promise. And a big part of why we know that works is we know this doesn't work. There are places where it deserves more support. There are places where Social Security deserves more support to make sure that the structures are set up in the way that we're keeping pace with what people really need. But big picture, we know that Social Security works. We know that Social Security is reliable. It's a thing you can count on. It's going to keep being something you can count on in the future. And when we hear folks who keep trotting out the same old stories that we know aren't true about why it doesn't work, we should ask why. And we should ask why they're saying that and what they're looking for.
Yeah, so important. Where are the incentives? What are the motivations that can often lead you to the more important truths about things? Folks, my guest in this first segment of our 3 o'clock hour, her name is Molly Weston Williamson. She's a senior fellow focused on labor policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Molly, last question to you as we close out this segment. What should people do if they are concerned about these cuts and think they are a bad idea?
It's time to get loud. It's time to get loud about what Social Security means to American families, about the very real risk that when these cuts pile up, those checks are not going to go out, that we're going to have an unprecedented system failure. It's time to get loud with your representatives. It's time to really make sure folks understand what Social Security means and that collectively we can't afford to break it because we need it.
Folks, Molly Weston Williamson of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Hands off our Social Security. No more cuts to the staff or field offices or regional offices. That's a bad idea. Our fine program continues when we come back. Is Pete Hegseth out? Breaking news. Who knew? A consequence for incompetence out of the Trump administration. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In one of his most bone-chilling orders to date, President Donald Trump directed the U.S. Department of Justice and other agencies to open an investigation of Christopher Krebs, the former head of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Security Agency. Krebs' alleged crime? Publicly refuting Trump's unfounded claims of widespread fraud in the 2020 election. Trump's April 9th memorandum reads in part, Krebs, through CISA, falsely and baselessly denied that the 2020 election was rigged and stolen, including by inappropriately and categorically dismissing widespread election malfeasance and serious vulnerabilities with voting machines, unquote. On November 12, 2020, Krebs had posted a joint statement from the Elections Infrastructure Government Coordinating Council and the Election Infrastructure Sector Coordinating Executive Committees, which said, "The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history, and there was no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. The two groups represent CISA, secretaries of state, state election directors, and numerous election technology and cybersecurity organizations." In addition to ordering the investigation, Trump stripped Krebs' security clearance and that of Sentinel One, the cybersecurity company where Krebs worked until his resignation April 16th. We have Trump's disturbing memo at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones in your area. Check 511WI.gov or download the free 511 app to see current road work, closures, detours, and camera views on your route. Wherever your travels take you, know before you go with 511WI.gov. That's 511WI.gov. And remember, know before you go. Always park the phone while driving. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. It is Monday here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Warming up to a Wednesday lineup change here on the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. From 6 to 9, starting on Wednesday, you're going to be able to hear Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, followed by Matt Nair on air, my fabulous colleague, Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach, hosting that fun take on politics each weekday from 9 to 11. From 11 to 2, you'll find Tom Hartman making us all a little bit smarter and more compassionate every day. Todd Alba, seeking truth wherever it leads from 2 to 4, this fine slot. And then I will be in your drive time with you on your evening commute from 4 to 6 p.m. across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. I hope you come with us, with me, to continue these great discussions. So very important today. I just want to plug this again, folks. Today, I did not get to Justice Alito's dissent in the what I'm going to call 1 a.m. Hail Mary Supreme Court intervention to actually require the Trump administration to follow our Constitution. I'm going to dissect his dissent. Dissect his dissent tomorrow on the air. And I'm going to tell you what Justice Alito has in common with the liberal bloc, at least in the over this past weekend, with the liberal bloc on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. You're not going to want to miss that coverage. I'm going to be kicking that off right at the top of the show tomorrow, still at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Wednesday is when I begin at 4 p.m. Be sure that you are marking your calendars and not going to miss that. But let's talk about Pete Hegseth. NPR reporting just minutes ago that the White House has begun a search for a new Secretary of Defense. Again, this is according to NPR. You think? I mean, seriously, the guy with drunken impulse control problems, a litany of problems in workplaces, bankrupted not one but two nonprofits, a credible sexual assault allegation. Oh, wait, I'm not talking about our president. I'm just talking about our Secretary of Defense. My bad. Did you get confused there about which dirtbag I might have been talking about? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so glib. I was so shocked this weekend, right? I see It was like a series of shocks. I don't know about all of you, but it was a series of shocks. First, the Supreme Court having to intervene because breaking news that Donald Trump putting migrants subject to the Supreme Court order on buses to deport, even though the order says they get due process. That intervention going into Saturday morning, then the unbelievable Signalgate 2.0 occurring. You got the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision on the Evers. I don't even know what to call it. The 400-year veto. I'll cover it tomorrow. That broke. Then it was Easter. You got Vance talking to the Pope. The Pope then basically getting in front of, 8 billion Catholics worldwide and saying what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump stands for is garbage. And then the Pope dies. What else could have possibly happened this weekend? Also, Marco Rubio just Thursday night into Friday saying basically like, oh, I know Donald Trump promised to have that whole Ukraine peace Russia thing sorted out. But that might not happen. We might not get there. So just a couple things, but let's talk about the Pete Hegseth Signalgate 2.0, because this is so ridiculous. This is so ridiculous. And the whys behind this, one can only hazard a guess, and I think there's only one guess that has even a small chance of being accurate. So let's level set. What happened this weekend? Well, turns out at the same time, Pete Hegseth and Mike Walls and a bunch of other Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance were all on a unsecured Signal chat talking about military strikes against the Houthis in Yemen on one Signal chat. He was also on a Signal chat with his Fox contributor wife, his personal lawyer, who also is magically employed by the Pentagon. Weird. Just became employed by the Pentagon. And his bro on a different Signal chat, also being like, guys, I'm so important. I just ordered the military to strike the Houthis in Yemen. Check out my war plans. Both Signal chats at the same time. And by the way, the timing here is key. The strikes against the Houthis in Yemen were the United States' single largest military effort since Donald Trump took office. So this was the first time that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, let's grab a few beers after work, got to send in the big bomb somewhere. So you think he might have been bragging to his wife and his lawyer and his bro? I mean, huh? First big strike, that's who he's talking to about this on Signal, two separate channels. Yes, the one you heard about before with the reporter on it. Oops-a-daisy. And now also his wife, his bro, and his lawyer who magically got hired by the Pentagon, just a little while ago. Personal lawyer. His wife, his Fox contributor wife, his wife, his personal lawyer, and his brother have absolutely no reasons to see the timing of the Air Force strikes against Houthis. They had no need to see that information. They weren't approved to see it. This guy's judgment could not be worse. Could not be worse. 855-752-4842. I want to get your impressions about this. Do you think Hegseth should probably resign? Why do you think he's on the Signal apps? And keep this in the back of your head. Pete Hegseth was specifically briefed by security experts on his staff and told in the weeks leading up to the strikes against the Houthis in Yemen to not use Signal, that Signal had been compromised, that the Chinese or other adversarial enemy state actors could probably access your Signal chats, and he did it anyways. Oh, here's the other thing. Signalgate 2.0 on his personal phone. Not his super-duper encrypted secure government phone, nor using the billion-dollar-plus government communications network that we created for such communications. We discuss why. Why do you think he was doing this? And the implications. Is he actually going to get fired? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Are we safe enough with such an incompetent Secretary of Defense? We discuss next.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
To gather accurate data on custom service pricing across the state, UW-Madison is conducting its annual custom rate survey. Whether you offer a wide range of services or just a few on the side, your input is valuable. The survey is designed to be quick, easy, and anonymous. And Brian Luck, University Extension Ag Engineer, shares what you can expect when you participate.
We have a section on planting. We have a section on tillage, manure application, harvest in both silage and grain, yep, et cetera. We're doing trucking fees, et cetera. So we did our best to sort of work off of the survey we had before, yep, with an Ag Statistics Service, but we've added a few extra little things that we're kind of interested in as well in there. We're also currently taking feedback. So I don't want to blow up anybody's email address, but if you get a hold of this survey and you see something glaring in there that's not present, please let us know, because we're able to adjust this and make it, tailor it for folks in Wisconsin, which is exactly what we want to do.
That's Brian Luck, University Extension Ag Engineer, along with us. You can find the survey link on our website at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
Pause for a moment of clean row calm, brought to you by Storin Corn Herbicide. Preserve this moment of weed-free serenity at storeandwontquit.com or see your Syngenta retailer today. Always read and follow label instructions.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 481 and three quarters, down a half. New crop corn closed at 464 and a half, down 1.5 cents. Cash beans closed at 1029 and a half, that was down 7 cents. And new crop beans closed at 1025 and three quarters, and that was down 3 3/4. And July wheat closed at 552 and a quarter, down 10 cents. On the dairy side of things, May Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1812 a hundredweight. That is down 18 cents. And June milk is trading at 1727, down 16 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 180 and 3 quarters. That was down 3 and a quarter. 40-pound block cheese closed at 177 and a half. That was down 6 cents. And the AA butter closed down 2 and a quarter cents and closed today at 232. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Spotty sprinkles wind down this afternoon, but the winds won't quit, blasting us out of the northwest with gusts around 30. High temperatures today will scrape about 50 degrees and then fall below freezing tonight to the low 30s. A little bit warmer tomorrow with more rain rolling in. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 42.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the global cleft community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Ross calling in.
Thanks for your show. I'm just wondering if we're watching or witnessing a legal system that, where what we thought was precedent is now going to be sort of cast away.
The reality is, the question that you raise,
about the future? And what are the implications when, in fact, the things we understood always to be bedrocks of our community, of our nation, are no longer that?
Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time for a special Earth Day edition of the show. We'll be live from Governor Nelson State Park with Tia Nelson, daughter of Earth Day founder, former governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it's always better when we stand together for things like competence and national security. We're discussing Pete Hegseth's meltdown, Pete Hegseth's inability to follow simple instructions like don't use your personal cell phone to communicate military airstrike timings. In the hours before said airstrikes are to occur, you could kill pilots. You could kill American soldiers. That's bad. He was told this and yet used his personal phone and a messaging application called Signal to brag. It's the only possible justification that I can think of to his Fox contributor wife, his personal lawyer, and his bro, his literal bro. Like, hey, I'm the big man on campus. We're about to bomb them Houthis. I'm shocked by it. And here's the other thing. In true Trumpian fashion, everyone else gets blamed for Pete Hegseth's complete and utter total incompetence and failure to follow the most basic instructions from knowledgeable actual expert staff that told him in the weeks leading up to the strike against the Houthis to not use Signal and don't use your personal phone to talk about these things. Did it anyways, because Pete Hegseth, I don't know, fill in the blanks. Maybe we'll have a little episode of Mad Libs. That's a new segment. Pete Hegseth is blank. Adverb, right? Call in with your Mad Libs on Pete Hegseth, 855-752-4842. NPR reporting. Hegseth used the Signal messaging app on his personal smartphone, detailing minute-by-minute classified information about airstrikes on Houthi targets in Yemen. It happened at about the same time in March that Hegseth shared similar details with top White House officials in a different Signal chat group that accidentally included a journalist. That leak, hours before airstrikes hit, could have endangered U.S. pilots if that information about the timing of strikes was intercepted by U.S. adversaries. You don't say. And by the way, U.S. adversaries like China, Iran, North Korea, Russia, etc., can break the encryption on things like Signal. That's why the U.S. military and the Department of Defense spent billions to create a messaging platform that is only used by government officials with top secret clearances to communicate, you know, airstrike timing. Why aren't you using that? Well, two reasons. One, it's ego and he wants to brag, and you probably don't want you bragging and, you know, giving yourself a congratulatory slap on your own back, like, ooh, I'm the big man. You probably don't want that on the government communication system because that's subject to open records and FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. So why would you be using these channels on your personal phone to brag and to communicate information to people that you shouldn't be doing that with, and you don't want the open record, the public record that is subject to requests and record-keeping obligation under the National Archives laws, et cetera, et cetera? It's not like you can put in a FOIA request to be like, hey, give me all our military plans. But you're required to retain those, and eventually they do become discoverable under FOIA. The response from the Trump administration to both Signalgate 1 and Signalgate 2 has been to what? Blame everybody else. The acting inspector general for the Department of Defense undertook an investigation That investigation reportedly also leading up and into the weekend led to the resignations of three top officials within the Department of Defense, including his deputy chief of staff. Excuse me, the assistant to his deputy chief of staff. The reports are more people are considering resigning if Pete Hegseth sticks around. This is probably why they're looking to replace him. You can't literally have every person in leadership leave an organization and hope it survives. That usually doesn't work. And by the way, the people that resigned, it's clear from the circumstances that they were being blamed for the accurate information about Pete Hegseth's use of Signal getting out to the mass media. They're clearly taking the fall for that. This includes, these are two senior advisors, Dan Caldwell and Darren Selnick. They were accused of the leak. This is also another former Defense Department official, John Uliott, who left last week again. He then said in a piece that came out in Politico this weekend that the Pentagon is, quote, in disarray under Hegseth's leadership and suggested that Mr. Trump remove him. These are people that, like, got past the Trump vet to continue to work in Pete Hegseth's Department of Defense. You see what I'm saying? Like, these aren't some, you know, the swamp, the shadow liberal. And so what have they done for the past 2 days? Caroline Leavitt, Donald Trump, Pete Hegseth. They just blame these other people for his incompetence. Like, they wouldn't have anything to leak if they did leak, if you just did what everyone told you to do and not use your personal phone and not use the Signal app. How is your incompetence someone else's fault? Which brings me to, what does Pete Hegseth and Harvard have in common? Because you never thought you'd hear those two words together in the same sentence. Here's what they have in common. The Trump administration apparently accidentally sent the threat letter to Harvard last week. Not last week, the week before last. On Friday at 1 o'clock in the morning. Apparently 1 a.m. is when everything is happening. It wasn't supposed to go out. The one that said to Harvard, basically, we're going to take over management of your university and tell you who you can admit, what faculty get tenure. You're going to litmus test people now. And Harvard, this past Monday, a week ago today, said no thank you to the Trump administration. You remember this? And then they say, oh, we're going to yank your tax exempt status, your $2.2 billion in federal grants. They all go away. It's the only time anybody's been sympathetic to Harvard. Oh, I want Harvard to win. No one's ever said that until now. They're like, yes, you should beat the Trump administration. Their response to their own screw up, oh, we shouldn't have sent the letter to Harvard, to blame Harvard for taking the threat letter seriously. You can't make this crap up. All right, I just want to compare this, these two statements, because it's pretty hilarious. Here's Pete Hegseth blaming other people for his incompetence, okay? This is Pete Hegseth today. This is what the media does. They take anonymous sources from disgruntled former employees, and then they try to slash and burn people, ruin their reputation. It's not going to work with me. No, Pete, you do a fine job of ruining your reputation all by yourself. So that's Hegseth responding to his own incompetence coming out publicly. You know, when you're a White House cabinet official responsible for $2 trillion, 4 million employee department called the Department of Defense? Yes. That's Pete Hegseth's response. Those damn disgruntled employees and the media, blah. So they accidentally send the threat letter to Harvard. Harvard responds and is like, no, we're not going to do any of that. We'll see in court. Thank you. And here is the administration's response to the reporting about the fact that they sent the threat letter to Harvard in an error. See if you see a similarity here, folks. It was malpractice on the side of Harvard's lawyers not to pick up the phone and call the members of the anti-Semitism task force, who they had been talking to for weeks. Instead, Harvard went on a victimhood campaign. These two things are exactly like the other one. Pete Hegseth is objectively incompetent. So what does he do? He blames others for his incompetence and then blames the media, paints himself as the victim of these things, but accuses them of the bad actions. You get it? These people on the anti-Semitism task force, which isn't about anti-Semitism, it's about suppressing speech. It is cancel culture. It is the antithesis of free thinking, free speaking Americans and the independence of every private institution in the world, or at least here in the United States. Do you think the government should be able to tell your church what gets said from the pulpit on Sunday? Because that's what this is about, as they try to tell private universities how to teach, how to recruit, how to compensate faculty. And the response there is to call Harvard that they're some sort of false victimhood campaign, and it's their fault we're incompetent. Always somebody else's fault for the Trump administration's incompetence. Always. Of course, that's nonsense. Harvard said this in response to the White House's claim that it was somehow Harvard's fault that the White House screwed up and sent a threatening letter to Harvard. Somehow their fault. Harvard said this. The letter was signed by three federal officials, placed on official letterhead, and was sent from the email inbox of a senior federal official and was sent on April 11th as promised. The anti-Semitism task force said, we're going to send you a letter with our demands on April 11th. And then they sent a letter with their demands on April 11th, and somehow it's the Harvard administration's fault for figuring out that the letter was a mistake? For not figuring? Recipients of such correspondence from the U.S. government, even when it contains sweeping demands that are astonishing in their overreach, do not question its authenticity or seriousness. Are you frigging kidding? What the frickin' frack? Does this remind you of anything else? Oh, I'm sorry. We mistakenly deported a man in violation of his due process rights and a federal immigration judge order that said he should never be deported. But screw that guy. It's his fault because he's bad. Anybody picking up on a theme here? I'd like to know, what is the Trump administration actually responsible for? Would they ever stand up and say something doesn't go right? There's an error. Mistake happens. Is there any evidence of anyone that works for Donald Trump standing up and saying, yep, we screwed that up. Our bad. We'll fix that right away. I'm sorry. We're sorry. And if you worked in a company where none of your coworkers and nor your boss nor anybody in leadership would ever accept an ounce of responsibility for anything, would gaslight the hell out of you when their mistake made your work harder, is that a place you'd want to work? I mean, heck no. So, yes, Harvard, Pete Hegseth, immigration issues, it's all the same stuff. The Trump administration screws up royally, then blames everybody else and calls you a bad person when you ask about their mistakes. That's the pattern here. Cam from Appleton, thanks so much for your patience, my friend. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing all right. Good show today. I really like that you were able to cover the Pete Hegseth junk. If people want to act like this isn't such a big deal, or, well, signal's encrypted. One, for years now, AI has been getting studied to read encrypted traffic without decrypting it and being able to modify it while it's encrypted. That's not a joke. That is some serious problems and serious ramifications for quite literally every piece of security we use today. Two, I think people need a reminder of a really specific event. In 2016, a Russian journalist that was a military reporter in Syria was taking information from 4chan to bomb specific places in Syria, and they were just using Google Maps to figure out the specific places. If any of that information leaked to morons on a site like that or just anywhere, yeah, not great.
100%. Thanks so much for the call, Cam. Thanks to each and every one of you for sticking with me through my Hegseth and Harvard, what do they have to do with one another discussion. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the passing of Pope Francis, as well as what his final words to the world on Easter Sunday mean for Christians and Catholics who support Donald Trump. When we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabba, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I used to smoke. I thought of cigarettes as my best friend.
They were always there for me when I needed a break.
I also thought cigarettes were my best friend, and then they gave me peripheral artery disease.
I smoked and had a stroke. Actually, multiple strokes.
I smoked and have heart disease.
Here's my tip. If cigarettes are your friend, you need a better friend.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding. Just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just a reminder that coming Wednesday, you'll no longer find me from 2 to 4, but from 4 to 6 p.m. in a new drive time slot. And don't worry if your radio gets a little spotty driving in and out of Civic Media radio coverage. Just download the Civic Media app. You can always catch me crystal clear. I like to pick WAUK 540 AM as my home station. That's where I broadcast out of, coming to each and every one of you every weekday. What has been 2 to 4 will now be 4 to 6. Come with me for this new drive time experience. I want to talk about the passing of Pope Francis. It is worthy of note that the Pope passed away. I'm not sure if it was actually on Easter Sunday or early this morning. I believe it was on Easter. And he passes away after he has addressed his congregation for the last time, his congregation being the 8+ billion Catholics in the world, in his Easter address. He spoke very briefly yesterday to about 35,000 people standing in St. Peter's Square. And then Archbishop Diego Ravelli, whose formal title is the Master of Apostolic Ceremonies, read aloud Francis's Easter speech. This Easter speech is called, in Latin, Urbi et Orbi, which means to the city and the world. This speech could not have been any more of a direct repudiation of basically all of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the MAGAverse's worldview. Here was what the Pope said on the day that he died to his congregation, the world, to J.D. Vance specifically, who converted to Catholicism some 6 years ago, who met with the Pope on the day that he died. Here's what the Pope said to the world, to J.D. Vance, to Donald Trump. How much contempt is stirred up at times towards the vulnerable, the marginalized, and migrants. I appeal to all those in positions of political responsibility in our world not to yield to the logic of fear, which only leads to isolation from others, but rather to use the resources available to help the needy, to fight hunger, and to encourage initiatives that promote development. These are the weapons of peace, weapons that build the future instead of sowing the seeds of death. Excuse me, total population of Catholics, 1.4 billion. I don't know where I got eight. Stop texting me. I got the number wrong. 1.4 billion Catholics. This comes in the wake of other repudiations of the Trump administration and the MAGAverse from the U.S. Conference of Bishops addressing immigration. This was one of the organizing principles of Pope Francis. He himself was an immigrant, his family coming from Italy to Venezuela to escape fascism in Italy. Just this weekend, the National Catholic Reporter described a tweet from the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, to the papacy, to the Vatican, as tone deaf. On Thursday, the Reverend Avilio Mejiva Aea, the auxiliary bishop of Washington, penned an op-ed condemning the administration's shock and awe campaign against migrants and urging the faithful to speak up against it. We cannot let the dark side of anti-immigrant animus take hold. I thought it might be good to remind us ourselves of what Bishop Marianne Buddy said to Donald Trump on the day after his inauguration. Let's take a listen.
May God grant us the strength and courage to honor the dignity of every human being, to speak the truth to one another in love, and walk humbly with each other and our God for the good of all people, good of all people in this nation and the world. Amen.
Yeah. So kind of important, but not something Donald Trump is familiar with. And I will always struggle to understand how someone with such support from evangelical Christians can be so demonstrably unchristian in his words and acts on a daily basis. What is Easter about? Easter is about forgiveness. That Jesus Christ, according to the Bible, died for the sins of humanity so that we may be forgiven by God and resurrected. And yet, our leader, Donald Trump, when asked about what he has asked for forgiveness from God regarding, said this.
But have you ever asked God for forgiveness? I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
A man who has never asked God for forgiveness is no Christian. But to put the plight of immigrants, what's happened with Harvard, what happens with Pete Hegseth together of a whole, you do something wrong, don't say you're sorry. Just blame other people. I don't know. Was that in some book of the Bible that I missed during catechism? Weird. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. I'll be back with you tomorrow, my normal slot, 2 to 4. But set your calendars. Wednesday, you'll hear me during the drive time slot at 4 o'clock. We got a special live episode of Dan Schaefer coming up next, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, a discussion of the harm that's coming if President Trump sells off a bunch of public forest lands and fires more national parks workers.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
More than 600 international students and recent grads have had their visas revoked. Here's people that are here 100% legally. We've seen the ICE checklist. Do you wear a Chicago Bulls hoodie? Do you have a tattoo? Check, check, gone. Again, this is about due process and following the Constitution. And if we don't have that, then none of us are safe.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Pope Francis, who battled pneumonia for the past few months, died today. The Vatican released his death certificate showing the 88-year-old suffered a cerebral stroke. ABC's Terry Moran has more on his life.
All those unforgettable moments of Pope Francis, the way that he went to a war zone, that he brought refugees back to his own house in Rome. And all those gestures, that's really his legacy, not hammered out in writing in church doctrine, but in the witness that he bore with his own personal example. The question is, you know, personalities come and go. It's doctrine that survives. And what will come next is a question before the church.
The Vatican released the Pope's will and also stated he wants his funeral to reflect his humble life. Following the Pope's public funeral, cardinals will convene to choose his successor. President Trump today ordering flags be lowered to half staff in his honor. The president will also attend the Pope's funeral. This is ABC News.